This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me tonight are Richard Hawes.
Hello, everyone.
And Stephen Lockeridge.
Hello.
This week, we've got three new releases to talk about. We're going to kick off with Till Death Do Us Part, followed by Stolen Valley and On Fire. Our short shot is Fan Film, and our DTV throwback is a classic, The Ambulance. So, without further ado, let's crack on. Our first film, then, is Till Death Do Us Part. After bailing on her wedding, a former bride-to-be must fight off her ex-groom and seven angry killer groomsmen in order to survive the night. Okay. I had high hopes for this, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
I did. those high hopes didn't last very long. It has to be said.
Yeah.
I knew as soon as I saw Bond at Media Capital or Bond at Capital Media, whatever the fuck they're called, that they're very, you know, hit and miss. Sometimes they do latch onto a decent project, but most of the time, not. And this really, for me, this was sort of like it hit all those off key notes that they're kind of infamous for. What did you make of Till Death Do Us Part?
I agree with you. I was very disappointed in this. It didn't. Excuse me. Oh, Christ. Sorry. I just didn't get into it at all. I thought it was quite confusing because you've got one scene, you've got like the two scenes. Two parallel stories sort of running. One, she's done a runner from a wedding day. The other, they're on honeymoon. And they're talking about working at a university. So I'm like, hang on. Is this before? Is this after? It didn't kind of make sense. And then these groomsmen turn up. One of them is the most annoying prick you've ever met in your life. I mean, I suppose he's supposed to be his character, but Jesus Christ, he's annoying. And it kind of, I don't know, it kind of reminded me of like a Scott Pilgrim cross with Ready or Not or something like that. And
it wants to be meta, doesn't it? It wants to have that sort of, but no.
But it just didn't, I just didn't find it engaging. I thought the dialogue was dreadful. It's like, you know, We'll do a Tarantino ripoff and stuff it with all this, you know, like time put all this pop culture in and this jazz music and all this stuff.
It's all the monologuing, isn't it? I mean, you know, I think back to like the, you know, the Fortress films, and you know, monologuing about Bitcoin and all that sort of shit. This was, you know, it was that sort of thing. These overly talky moments. Ugh.
And even, you know, even the other section, you know, the other storyline.
A bit of a Jason Pastrick.
Which I did, it took me half an hour to realise it was him, I'll be honest. I just didn't get it. He just didn't go anywhere. And then the end is like, oh, here we go, here's the big, not a big twist, but hey, we'll mush it all together, then you know what's happened, and you know what's going on. And to be fair, I didn't give a shit what was happening. It lost me about half an hour in. I was just like, it just did nothing for me. Even you know, the supposed violent scenes weren't particularly well done. Especially the one with her and her jilted husband. I thought it was very, very flat. I really did.
So, Rich, I can't wait for probably about another 5 years where suddenly all of these kind of films will have a decent soundtrack. Do you know why?
Why?
Because all of a sudden, all the songs from the 60s will now be copyright free.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll be able to they'd sort of like pirate, you know, or plunge into the back catalogue of obscure 60s bands, and at least they'll fucking sound like something somebody wants to listen to, instead of, you know, sort of some Dean Martin, Tom Jones, Sammy Davis Jr. Knockoffs, which you know, oh, of course, everyone listens to this music. You know, it's so annoying. Where this film lost me was this woman jilts her husband. She knows she's part of a bloody team of assassins, for God's sake. You know, that's why she wants to leave them. She goes home, puts on some music, grabs a drink, and thinks that's going to be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She should have been sort of like, you know, flinging. She should have had a go bag ready to begin with, but she should have been getting out of that stupid fucking wedding dress, you know. But obviously, no, that's the hook for the whole film. You know, oh, she's the bride to be. She has to be in a fucking wedding dress. And that's, you know, the main reason why so many people online are comparing this, very unfavorably, I might add, comparing this to Ready or Not. Which is a real shame. Yeah. You know, that Ready or Not should be sort of like dragged down by this film in this sort of comparison. I digress though, Rich. What did you make of this film?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it when it was over. No. No, because I literally, I think this is the film I've hated most for a really, really long time. Because the main problem is the pacing. And it's just completely unrestrained. It's nearly 2 hours long, and it really, really didn't need to be. Every scene, I think, as you guys have already said, every scene is about two, three times longer than it really needed to be. Case in point, there's a scene where Natalie Byrne as the bride is coming, having a sort of her sort of face to face moment with the best man, played by Cam Gigandet. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, but you know he's a fairly reliable actor. But I think Steve said, you know, he is really annoying in this, the monologuing is the main issue there, because they just don't cut. There's no need for it. There's really no need for it. No. This film could have been really tightened up.
How long does it take them to get into the bloody house?
Well, how long does everything take? So, for example, like, go back to this scene, you know, she's having a confrontation with him. She's holding this knife to his throat. And the scene literally goes on for like 7 minutes or 6 minutes or something way longer than it really needed to be. And the whole film is like that. So it's like they just didn't restrain in the editing. I don't know. The film's made by Timothy Woodward Jr.
Yeah,
I haven't seen a lot of his stuff, but the first film of his that I did see really stuck in my head for many of the same reasons, and that was American Violence, which has a really great cast, but it kind of meanders, and it's just like going. It was a very frustrating film, but I could see a lot of potential in it because it looks, you know, the production values are there, and you know the cast is good. I mean, this one's got it doesn't have an amazing cast, but Natalie Byrne's quite strong. You know, Cam Gigandet is all right. We've got D.Y. Sow in there. It took me a while to recognize him, but D.Y. Sow, who was from the Shadow Master film that we watched.
Oh, yeah.
You know, very solid martial arts performer and stuff, so he gets to do a couple of scenes, which is quite cool. That's not too bad. But yeah, the action isn't amazing, but he's in there. Orlando Jones, whose career really went south very quickly after he, you know, he did things like Evolution and that, and then in, what was that, the early 2000s?
Yeah.
And I don't know if he just didn't choose the right projects or something, but he was in like Enemies Closer with Van Damme and stuff, and which is fine, but you know, it's kind of, he found himself in the sort of DTV realm very quickly for some reason, and he doesn't really have a great deal to do here, but he's one of the bigger names. You've got this really annoying comedy double act pair of, you know, like a little and large, you know, because one's a short guy and one's a really tall guy. And the dialogue is terrible and the jokes are terrible. And you hate all the characters. that's another main problem. You hate everyone. It's trying to be, I mean, Ready or Not is a big one. You know, Ready or Not and Kill Bill, they've sort of taken those two, you know, all, you know, the stuff from those, that, you know, the running around the house kind of thing, taking people out, the assassin's thing. They've literally just put those two concepts together. It plays out very much like Fear the Night, which we saw recently with Maggie Q. The whole sort of setup with the groomsmen and everything, and it's very very much made me think of Very Bad Things, the Christian Slater film, which I think had Cameron Diaz in it, if I recall correctly. But I didn't like that film either, but that was a better film. Peter Berg, I think, did that one. I mean, I was just hating it the whole time and thinking, Jesus, I've got so much to get through. And I sort of had a break because I couldn't get through all in one go. I was like an hour in. I was like, oh, I've got like another hour to go. I'll have to do it. You know, but I was like, I was really not looking forward to it. And it just plays out exactly like you expect it's going to, but like a terrible snail's kind of pace. They're just talking and talking and talking and just get it over with. You know, there's nothing original going on here. There's nothing interesting. There's nothing, you know, everything is time wasting. All that stuff, most of the stuff with Jason Patrick, who I didn't recognize really. It wasn't until I actually was looking through the IMDb.
Yeah.
And I saw that, oh, that's who he's playing in the film. Because I couldn't recognize him. He's just wearing the sunglasses and stuff most of it. But that's just going on and on about nothing. Yeah. It's just like, it's the most frustrating film. I was really looking forward to this. I thought it had a lot of potential. Poster was really cool. But no, hated it.
There is a better version of this kind of film called Till Death with Megan Fox.
Oh, Megan Fox. Yeah.
That is actually very good. You know, minimal dialogue. Yeah, she wakes up, she's gone to a like holiday home with her husband. He kills himself while handcuffed to her.
Yes.
And then some nasty people turn up to, you know, looking for money and stuff like that. That is a very good sort of taut thriller. This is just a waste of time. How are we going to score it? Steve?
I'll give it a 4.
And Rich?
God. 3? Yeah, 3. It's got good production values and stuff, but the fact that it's just so long and it's tedious. It's interminable.
That's
3.
That's the 3, I think. The 3 is the production values. You know, there is a certain amount of technical skill going on behind the camera. People turn up, you know, played characters, but the trouble is it is flat and the bloody script is fucking awful and that soundtrack just grates. Anyway. So 2 3s and a 4 for Till Death Do Us Part. Go check it out. Our next film is The Stolen Valley. To save her dying mother, Lupe, a Mexican Navajo mechanic, bands together with an outlaw cowgirl. Together, they must travel across the desert, outrun criminals, and confront a corrupt landowner. Steve, what did you make of The Stolen Valley?
I don't know. It started off all right. And I just think it's a bit mild. I think it should have gone for... I think it's like a PG-13. And it's like they've reined the violence in. And rain blood in and stuff. And there's so many
Mexican standoffs.
Not so much, no. My mind's gone blank. I can't think of the word. It turns out that she's her sister and the brother and sister. And then, you know,
Oh, contrivances.
Yeah, not
coincidental contrivances.
That'll do. That'll be the one. And it was just a little bit too unbelievable.
Mm.
You know, and
sorry, I hate to interrupt, but can we re-record that? Because I don't think we should give away that big twist.
You don't think?
No, well, that's kind of, yeah, it's kind of like a big spoiler for the movie. I've got my issues with it, but I don't think we should mention it.
Fair enough.
Okay, I'll lead you in again, Steve.
All right.
Steve, what did you make of The Stolen Valley?
Right, okay. It seemed to be... It starts off okay, but it just seems to be reined in. It's a PG-13, and you've got gangsters, following them, trying to track them down. And I just, through the whole film, I just think the violence was reined in. I think it would have been better going for an R rating.
Mm-hmm.
I just think I would have injected a bit more life into it. There's too many contrivances in the scripts, and I just think that some of the performances are a bit overboard, like the evil bad guy. I just think he's too twirling his mustache and stuff like that. So I wasn't overly impressed with it. I mean, there's some good, it looks good. The place where they shot it was beautiful. But apart from that, I wasn't feeling this. I don't know about you guys, but it just, again, felt very flat, this.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I did like some of the sort of the confrontational moments. But otherwise, yeah, like you, I think it could have done a bit more in the violence bit. Because, the stakes that are involved and everything, it turns into the A-team a bit. Rich, what did you make of it?
Well, conversely to my feelings on Till Death Us Do Part, I absolutely loved this. Now I've got a major reservation, but overall, I was just drawn into it and really enjoying it. It's a fantastic, as you were saying, fantastic looking film. The cast of unknowns I thought were great. Really got into the characters. I thought the whole thing had a very lively cinematography, and the film's very humorous, but also got some very well played dramatic scenes. There's a relationship between the lead character and an antagonist, reminded me a lot of All Souls, which we watched recently. Different relationship between those two characters, but essentially kind of the same kind of thing going on, and same kind of confrontations, because they've got a certain history. The thing you mentioned, things that are just a bit too coincidental or whatever, that say there's the very frustrating plot contrivance that comes towards the end, and that almost ruined it, because I just thought that was just completely ridiculous and it made no sense, and I would dock it a point for that. But I thought everything else was really good. It's made by, I didn't know this until after I looked it up, but the director, Jesse Edwards, he made the short film Life After that we watched, which was about the hostage situation. It was about a half hour long, really good. I wasn't sure whether he was going to pad it out and make that into a bigger story, but obviously I guess this was what he went off and made next. Very different, very Western style. It's got two great lead actresses in the lead. One of them's a indigenous character. It's all the stolen land of the title is kind of the motivating thing about the central sort of thing that they're the main character is concerned with. It's the
MacGuffin,
the community's land. There's a lot of history there, and there's but her mother she comes from that land and her mother is ill and she's trying to find sort of solutions to that, and that's kind of the motivator. But the I don't want to give it away, but there's various things going on in this. Say the drama, a lot of the drama comes out of the central the main character and her drive to help her mother. There's like that Thelma and Louise kind of element that comes in where when she teams up with
Maddie.
Maddie, who played by what's her name? Ali Sutton Heathcote, yeah, who I believe is a former like beauty queen or something like that, and she's got various credits in her past, none of which there was one film she did called Forgiven that I have seen, but I didn't know her from it, and I don't remember her. I don't know, she might have had a really small. Oh, actually, I think we watched Triumph as well with did we watch? Yeah, we watched Triumph, which had Terrence Howard in, which was directed by Brett Lenn.
Oh,
But again, I don't know who she was in it or what role she didn't jump out. But this is a real sort of, very central performance that she can really sink her teeth into. She's a great character. She's kind of the cash to I guess to Lupe's tango, if you want to put it that way. They're a good pair. Yeah, I enjoyed their scenes a lot. And yeah, the bad guys are, all really interesting. It's really interesting. The plot, some of the plot did remind me a lot of the Alexander Witt film. I think it was called, it was, I think it was Soraya, something like that. Well, which was on Amazon. There's actually a second one out now, but we covered it. It was the first
Oh,
one
the Chilean
where,
one.
it might have been, where basically bad guys are coming for her land and she's trying to fight them off and stuff. So yeah, that's more of an action movie kind of thing than this, but the central concept about somebody trying to get control of land or keep control of land and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, so I mean, for my on my side, for my experience, I thought this was great. I loved all, spending time with all the characters. It was a bit shorter than the previous film we talked about, but I could have watched this for longer. I could have spent more time with these characters. I thought it was good. I wouldn't mind if there was a sequel. I don't think there's a sequel there, but I certainly enjoyed spending time with the characters. I think Jesse Edwards is a great writer director. This is the second thing I've seen that he's done that I've been really impressed with. So I will definitely be excited about whatever he does next. So yeah, that's my two pennies worth.
Nice. Cool. And on that note then, Steve, how are you going to score it?
I'll give it a six.
And Rich?
I would have given it an 8, but that awful plot contrivance towards the end, I have to dock it one, as I said. So yeah, 7.
Yeah, I'm going to join Steve on a six for this one. Didn't quite grab me as much as it did you, for sure. Two sixes and a seven for The Stolen Valley. Go check it out. Our next review is On Fire. A family who lives in a trailer home in the woods are suddenly confronted by a wildfire. Survival becomes their only objective. The first takeaway from this is, God, I feel old. And the reason I feel old is because I'm looking at Lance Henriksen, who looks like he's at death's door in this film. And I'm like, oh my God. When you see his name in the credits, you go, oh, Lance Henriksen's in this. And then you see him and you go, oh, fuck. I want Lance Henriksen from 40 years ago, not now. Jesus.
He is 83 now.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's like you're being confronted with your own mortality when you see him on screen. Anyway, what we have here is basically a 90-minute film, 30 minutes of which are pure soap opera family dynamics and stuff, trying to sort of like emotionally invest the viewer in this family's plight. I personally don't think it works. They make some very strange decisions. But you have to give credit where credit's due, and that those fires do look pretty nasty. Steve, what did you make of On Fire?
I enjoyed this actually. To be fair, I wasn't expecting much. But you look at the cast, and it's a pretty decent cast, really. Obviously, you got Lance Henriksen and then Fiona Dorie, who I've not seen for a while since like the last Chucky film. And also, is it Peter Facinelli? I'm not sure how you pronounce it, yeah. Who, well, last I saw was in Twilight, really. But yeah, that's another story. That was awful. I think you've got like the 45-minute character build up and stuff like that, which is quite interesting. It's he's was it the son's like a high school long distance runner, so that's your Chekhov's gun, and his
What's a
wife's got a
Chekhov's
curse.
run?
Ooh.
the wife's pregnant. Granddad's at death's door. It's not one end that stretches itself. I think it, the effects and stuff actually do work quite well within the framing of the film and everything like that. So it's not, they haven't got a massive budget, but they do what they do in a way, they do it well. There's a couple little ropey CGI bits, but apart from that, I just thought it worked really well. And the only thing that kind of got me a little bit with was the bit with the 911 responder. That just seemed a little bit tacked on to make it, just to fill up a bit. I don't know if it just seemed they didn't really need to be there, but I suppose it did spread it out, and it's quite insanely focused on this family, just give it that little bit extra for other people.
Yeah, it's good. It's good for sort of context, I think, just to sort of like, give you, keep you in the wider picture of what's going on and what, because it could be that, these people are sort of, in the middle of this thing, and like, well, if you walk half a mile that way, then you're fine. So, but anyway. Okay, so Rich, what did you make of On Fire?
Well, the first thing that struck me was that a disaster movie, quite interesting. Peter Facinelli, quite interested. The fact that he directed it or co-directed it interested me. And the way those credits were presented, it really intrigued me because it's kind of presented like that thing you do with or Hollywood movies do when there's like two movie stars and neither of them can be superior to the other. So they have to put one on the left, but slightly lower than the one on the right. So the one on the right is higher, but it's on the right, and the one in the other. So they're quite askew. They look really weird. It looks, but it's so that one has priority on one side and one has priority on the other side. So there's equality. And
Well,
I thought that was really odd. Yeah.
looking at it, apparently the other guy, is it Nick Lyon,
Nick Lyon. Yeah.
caught COVID
COVID.
near the end of the show, so he stepped in to finish it.
Yeah, I just saw
So,
that on the IMDb as well, which makes sense. I think is I'm a little bit disappointed by it because I thought he would Peter Facinelli was more involved rather than just sort of picking up baton at the end of the movie, but he sort of took it through to completion. And when he had directed before, I mean he wrote and directed the film The Vanished, which I don't think he starred in, but it had Anne Heche and Thomas Jane and Jason Patrick. And it did look interesting. I do want to see it at some point. And he'd done a film called Breaking and Exiting. Again, he didn't star in that one, Milo Gibson. So this was, it's not common for him to direct a film he's starring in, or, to try and pull double duty in that way. So I guess that was probably a challenge for them to sort of finish off. Anyway, so understanding that makes sense. But I just thought it was really weird to see those credits in that way, in that format. Nick Lyon, we've seen films by him before. He did a film about Dunkirk, Operation Dunkirk, And which we covered. He's done various other things of differing apparent, apparently varying quality. Because he's done a, he did a film called Titanic 666, for example, which I haven't seen, but doesn't sound amazing.
Sounds an asylum effort, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds something like that. And Species: The Awakening, which I have seen, which was the fourth film in the Species series. So he's well versed in low budget and end filmmaking kind of stuff. So this is quite solid, for what it is. I like disaster movies. I'd watched Dante's Peak and Volcano recently, just because they became available, and I've been wanting to. Well, Dante's Peak specifically became available on board. So I've been in on a bit of a disaster movie thing, and this kind of fitted in with that. So it has all that, again, the sort of family stuff, and it was great to see Lance Henriksen, even though he's not in it a great deal. Peter Facinelli, yeah, it's quite funny to because I always remember him from Can't Hardly Wait, and that's back in like 2000 now. And I always thought he had so much of a Tom Cruise quality about him. And I guess it is still there, but he actually looks older than Tom Cruise now almost, with the beard and everything. But yeah, I haven't followed his career, but I know he's had a very solid career doing various films and TV shows over the years. So I enjoy watching him. I think he's quite a good actor. The rest of the cast I thought were fine. But say it's a very small cast, very focused. The stuff with the emergency op call operator, the film says it's inspired by true events, I think, but whether that was so I did wonder, and I haven't verified it or found any verification of it, but I did wonder if the calling to the operator was like one of the elements that was like a thing that really happened, and they were drawing on that, that maybe the there was that emotional connection that was happening between those people. But say, I don't know, because they never sort of dwell into it. It could be just like inspired by true events because there was a fire somewhere. It could be that. It might not be any sort of characters or anything. But yeah, so within its budget constraints, I thought, like you guys, I thought the visual effects and stuff were perfectly acceptable. And it did its job in that. It's actually really, really short. I think it's over in like an hour and 20 minutes, maybe
No, it's funny,
less
yeah.
actually. Yeah, because it's yeah, the film is an hour and 20. So the film before the credits is like, I think it's like an hour and 15 or something. So it's very short, very, very tight in that sense. I don't know if you spotted him, but there's a fairly well-known actor who's also a director, who has a bit part uncredited at the end. And I think it must have been a favor to, whether it was to Peter Facinelli or to Nick Lyon, or it must have been a friend of theirs or something, because I was just like, oh, it's him. And then he doesn't say anything, and then he's gone. And it was just a really random. It's like when you get like famous film directors or something just have like a walk-on cameo. Or just completely unnecessarily, and they make it's not even like a proper cameo because they don't make a fuss about it. He's kind of a back, he's almost a background player, so it's very odd. I'm not going to say who it is because those who go and watch it might get a kick out of it, or look through the IMDb and get a kick out of find it's not like he's massively famous, but he's quite I've seen him in a few Jesse Johnson films and stuff. He's quite well known. But the other sorry, I should also mention Fiona Dourif's also in this, as Peter Facinelli's character's wife, Fiona Dourif being the daughter of Brad Dourif, and she's on the Chucky series and stuff like that, and obviously the DTV sequel that came before it. So yeah, there's not a lot to it. Say it's simple, straightforward, soapy drama, disaster, hour and 10 minutes of your life. I'd say it's if you've got an hour and 10 minutes or something, and you enjoy a disaster movie, it's definitely worth a watch. It's not a big budget movie. You're not going to get your huge Dante's Peak kind of effects and stuff, or even Erwin Allen sort of level. But I thought it was solid.
Cool. And okay, Steve, how are you going to score it?
I'll give it a 7.
I'm going a 6 on this one. And Rich?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 6.
There we go. 2 6s and a 7 for On Fire. Go check it out. Our short shot this week is fan film. Ambition blurs into obsession as filmmakers pursue their vision at any cost, spiraling into a dark journey of creation and consequence. Wow, that is some word salad. So this is a fucking brilliant short. It really is. It works on so many levels. It's both a love letter and an indictment to people who go out and make a fan film. You know, there's this sort of like Field of Dreams element at the beginning. You know, if you build it, they'll come kind of attitude. You know, this guy having this repetitive dream of like, he's going to make a fan film, it's going to be make him famous and all the rest of it. So, you know, he convinces his wife to help him out and put this thing together. Yeah, I thought it was absolutely superb. You know, the whole idea, the lightsaber bit is fucking hilarious. You know, this absolute just amateur sort of level of flailing their arms around to sort of make it look like a lightsaber. I mean, it's not a Star Wars related thing. You know, they come up with their own sort of franchise. You know, it's a sort of fictional famous franchise called The Watchman, and do a good job of sort of setting that all up. And you know, at the end of the day, it looks fantastic as well. All the drone shots and everything, you know, the lighting, they absolutely nail it. Steve, what do you make of fan film?
Yeah, really, really enjoyable, this one. You've got, like you say, you know, the actual fan film, then it goes like a little bit darker, but you've also got like the behind the scenes with the woman doing the editing and putting it all together, and then obviously the, you know, the police showing up, and I just thought it was really well done, and like you say, it looks absolutely stunning. The drone shots in the desert are just absolutely fantastic, and it's one that it's funny, it's got pathos, it's got chills, it's got thrills, it's everything. But sometimes I find the shorts are a bit, yeah, fair enough, that's it. You know, it's just like a one scene action shot or something like that. But this has actually got a nice flowing story and, you know, quite a few different tones in it as well. And I just think it works really, really well together.
Absolutely. Rich, you curated this one for us. What can you tell us?
It's directed by Drew Garcia, who made an excellent, he's done various other things, but an excellent film with his brother Nate called Hero, which was in 2018, which I think you guys would both really like. I'm not going to tell you what happens in it, but the concept of it visually and stuff is a bunch of kids playing. But then they're imagining themselves as adults, which we've seen varying versions of that before. But, you know, it's kind of their imagination. And, you know, it's so it cuts between the kids and like the adults in the sort of grown up sort of scenario of, and, you know, cross cutting between them. It's very, very cool. This is a solo effort from Drew Garcia and coming out of his Ice Cream Entertainment company that he formed with his brother. 16 minute film, amazing quality. I think it actually shares a lot in common with the Stolen Valley in terms of the strengths that I think it has. You know, it just looks fantastic, cinematography is really good, a lot of great bits of humor. Some of it is some of it's quite subtle and dry, and then you've also got, you know, some quite well-played moments of drama, but it all plays out very quickly. It's almost like it's almost like a recap, to some degree. You know, like when you're like the plot summary sort of thing you're having, because they condense it so much, but it's so, it weaves so effortlessly between the, you know, between the different scenes, and the way the time is condensed. You know, they're covering a very long period of time, and they're doing it sort of in a very clever sort of puzzle piece kind of way. And then they're also adding in flashback elements and side bits, and you know, they'll introduce they'll introduce one bit that's like a moment of a twist, and then they'll go back and show a moment that happened just before that, because just to give a little bit more information, the core character, say again, like Stolen Valley, the whole cast is unknowns. I thought they were really good. The fact that they came up with it, they could have just used Star Wars or something, because yeah, you know, there's so many Star Wars fan films out there. They could have done like but they've kind of done like a Galaxy Quest thing where they've kind of gone, we're going to reference a particular thing, but we're not going to call it that thing. We're going to make it this other thing. So instead of Star Trek becomes Galaxy Quest, and in this one, Star Wars becomes The Watchmen, or you know, or The Mandalorian, or whatever. It's, you know, it's a variation. It looks like it's supposed to be something from that sort of Star Trek universe. The Star Wars universe.
He's a Jedi, basically.
That's basically it. It's really good. And it can say it's got twists and turns, and you can see where it's going. It's very subtle. It's playing with, you know, all the shots are very meaningful, and you know, you can see where things, you get indications where things are going and stuff. And the lead character is just sort of so driven that he's kind of not seeing the wood for the trees of what, you know, what's going to take place. And then, you know, it all leads to a thing. And it's constantly cutting to and fro around the making of this short film, which is funny because he's got these grand aspirations for it, but it's essential. And he's kind of big talking it up, but he's essentially talking about making something really, really short that is basically one guy running around in the woods. We're not talking about like a very high end fan film, like maybe like, you know, something like the Kenobi fan film and things like that. This is just very basic, you know, not really any dialogue, you know, just some footage of, you know, like of a character walking around in different locations and stuff. But he's got this, it's like he spends all day writing the script, and then the script is basically he walks from here to there, you know, kind of thing. You imagine, but he seems so proud of it. He's got this idea and whatever. So it's like the film is not as grand, and it's got these, it's going to be really short, and you know, he's advised to make it a trailer, which is a thing that is very common with fan films, is that, you know, when they have a lot of ideas and stuff, but they don't have any money or don't have much money or time to invest in it, they'll say, okay, I can't make the film, as in like a feature, and I can't really make it long enough to sort of do all the other bits I want. So what I'll do is I'll show my vision for what it could be by doing it in the form of a trailer. That's very common. There was a pod racing one recently, which is excellent. I don't think we've had a chance to talk about it, but I do highly recommend that one, which basically takes the Star Wars Episode One pod racing stuff and tries to position that as a film around that whole concept. That was really, really well done. The character in this, the filmmaker here, is just a regular guy, so he doesn't have those skills, but he's basically got a couple of cameras and stuff, and he's got this dream, which is, you know, like many other filmmakers. So yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in here. There's a lot of there's a lot of very subtle not digs at fan films, but I think it's quite affectionate about fan films, but it's talking about a very particular kind of fan film rather than, say, the more grander ones. But the quality is just amazing. It's such a good film. I'm so glad to hear you guys sort of echo the sentiments that I was feeling when I was watching it. I've watched it twice, and I do think it's one of the best I've seen this year.
As you say, it's a 16 minute short. It is dealing with about three or four different plot strands, because there's the making of the film, the editing of the film,
relationships between the characters.
What's happening with the relationships. And then that sort of midpoint where they introduce another character,
mm-hmm.
which throws a whole other perspective on what's been going on. It's just so deftly edited together. It's just really, really well done. Okay, if that's everything on this one.
Yeah. Say, just look out for Drew Garcia. Say, say he wrote and directed this. He's got loads of. He was a cinematographer as well and the editor. This is his baby. You know, he's clearly got a lot of talent. I think he's been making films for quite a long time. I mean, he started when he was young, you know, with his brother and, you know, messing around. He's one of those kids who's just always made films, and you can really see those skills. He's I think he's worked on some feature length things as well. But yeah, definitely keep an eye on this guy.
Absolutely. We don't score the shorts, but we'd certainly recommend you check them out. And we'll put a link to this in the footnotes below. Go check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is The Ambulance. A comic book artist meets a woman on the New York streets, but after a quick flirtation, she suddenly collapses and is picked up by an old ambulance. He checks out all the hospitals in the area, but the woman has disappeared. So this is a classic film. I remember watching this on VHS back in the day. I even owned a copy for a long time before I got rid of all my VHS tapes because I was an idiot. But Steve, if ever there was a film which needed a caveat to be viewed through modern eyes, it's this one. Because, you know, the way it presents this whole thing at the beginning, it's like, oh, it's so cute. He's chatting her up on the street. You know, he's lucky he doesn't get kneed in the balls and maced in the face, basically. And, you know, and people sort of screaming, sort of stalker and shit at him. It reminds me of actually, I don't know if you're as old as I am, to remember the old Impulse adverts. Yeah, Impulse body spray, and the tagline was something like, "If a stranger comes up to you with a bunch of flowers, you know that's Impulse or something." It's like, what the fuck, you know? It's like, no, you just don't do that anymore. But you know, that aside, this is a classic film. A brilliant performance by Eric Roberts in this. Only sort of matched by his chest, which is
and the mullet.
Oh. I mean,
yeah, he's one of the worst mullets I've ever seen. He's
there's scenes in this where he's wearing a vest, and it seems to be the most redundant piece of clothing ever, because it doesn't do anything to try and cover up any part of his body. You know, you've never seen so many nipple slips. It is absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, had you seen this one before, Steve?
Yes, I remember watching this when it came out, because it was all over the trailers on every single video that you watched from the rental shop. There was like so much hype for it coming out. I'm sure they even have posters of it. Like billboards, which I don't remember for like any other, you know, like DTV film. I'm sure they did. But yeah, it's just, that is cheesy fun. I didn't remember that Stan Lee's actually in it as well.
There's a lot of people who will credit this as being the first official Marvel film, mainly because of his appearance in it.
And he's working, and he is Marvel in it. It's Marvel,
that's right,
which is amazing.
Exactly, yeah.
He actually works on Marvel, but I mean, it is ridiculous, you know, but in a good way, you know. Like the scene where she turns up to the nightclub, the policewoman, and the ambulance is just in the corner of the nightclub. You're like, what? You know what I mean? They're running this secret operation. Look. Above a nightclub in New York. Of course they are. You know.
What self-respecting trendy nightclub wouldn't have an old ambulance with its lights flashing and everything?
In the corner next to the DJ booth. But yeah, and The only scene that got me, I was like, oh, it really didn't work, was the one where he gets mugged.
Oh, that's funny, that is.
Yeah, but it doesn't fit with it, you know what
no,
I mean?
It's a weirder side, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then the ambulance shows up, so he gets them to try and beat the shit out of him. And then he's like, oh, come on. That scene didn't need to be there. It really didn't. Like you say, though, he's trying to chat her up. And then next thing, he's, you know, in a relationship with the copper. Forgets all about her until he finds her. And he's just like, what? Hang on a minute. But yeah, it's one of them. It's definitely a product of its time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Larry Cohen did so many stuff like that. And you've got James Earl Jones in there as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I didn't remember him being in it as well, but yeah.
It's a good job he's got a stick of gum on hand, otherwise he'd be chewing in the scenery, basically. Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Rich, I'm pretty sure you must have seen this before.
I think I'd only ever seen the trailer because I very much remember the film from the time, but watching it I don't think I ever saw this because I don't remember anything about it. I just remember certain moments that were probably in the trailer because this was not what I expected. I thought it was like a duel kind of thing about, you know, an ambulance with, like, you know, you never see the driver kind of thing or whatever. Whereas that's very much not what this is. It's more of a kidnap thriller, but the flip side of that is that it's a really weird movie. Yeah. Like I said, it's very quirky. It's very odd. It's very unusual. It's got the sort of trappings of a say kidnap sort of thriller.
Well, it's more of a sort of conspiracy thing, isn't it? Where nobody believes the hero, what's going on.
Yeah,
exactly. And all that sort of stuff and talking to the cops and that. But it's all handled in such a weird way and anchored by this very, very, you know, offbeat performance by Eric Roberts as a character that's obviously written very odd as well. But it's like, it seems like this, but it's a very, it's, this is kind of an Eric Roberts before he became known as, like, Eric Roberts, like we know now. You know, this is not one of his earlier sort of, you know, sort of,
this is after,
you know, typical standard restrained performance. This is a wild performance from him, as, say, this comic book artist who's, say, a bit of a weird character. And, you know, you know, you could think of, like, Russell Brand or something, you know, stuff that's going on with him lately. And think of that character's got a bit of that going on. But it's a really quirky, and that's the quirkiness all comes from, you know, Larry Cohen. I think when he did Cue the Winged Serpent, you know, people might be expecting, like, a monster movie, but it's like, it's very different to that. It's got all this other stuff going on that's quite odd. But that's, you know, the stuff, same thing, you know, Larry Cohen, you know, he does quirky quite a lot. So he plays with conventions and everything, and that's what's happening here. So it's a bit weird because you kind of see very early on, you see some of the villains of the film, and that, you know, there's not really a lot of mystery apart from the why, but there's a lot of strange. It's like the ambulance has this, when it's driving around, it's got this lime green interior light and stuff. It's very odd, and you think that might mean something, but actually it ultimately doesn't. It's just the lighting when they even open it, you know, it's looking like that. It's just not explained, it's just for some reason, but it looks very eerie and very odd. It's just one of the qualities of the film. The vehicular action, which is by Spiro Rosatos, we worked with Cohen quite a lot.
Did he work on, like, Maniac Cop and stuff like that as well?
Yeah, he did Maniac Cop 2, which was all, Laurie Landon appeared in that, and also she appears in this. They're all around the same time, you know, similar kind of stuff, things going on. So the vehicle action in here does echo that a lot. You know, it's very, very particular style. A style you don't see, even though he's working on the Fast and Furious and stuff. You know, it still doesn't feel as visceral as what you get in, like, this film. I think, and certainly in Maniac Cop 2 with some of the, you know, the thing where they're dragging someone along the side of the car. We've got say lots of random, say the whole Marvel Comics thing. It makes it interesting in retrospect, and Stan Lee being there. Stan Lee looking nothing like we're current, we became used and recognizing Stan Lee as. I went back and I watched a documentary after this on Disney Plus called Stan Lee, which was all about his history and stuff. And you just see how different he's looked over the years. He's had all these different looks, and you would never recognize him as being the same guy. But the sort of grandfather figure that he became, from like his appearances in Mallrats onwards, basically, was like the Stan Lee we recognize. But here it is just like what, a couple of years before Mallrats, and he just looks like a completely different person. But yeah, he's got a couple of scenes. He was friend. He was a. He yeah. He was friends with Larry Cohen. They were trying to get. He. They were both. He. Stan Lee was trying to get some Hollywood movies off the ground, which wasn't really happening. And I think Larry Cohen was writing one of them. I think it was a Doctor Strange adaptation. Yeah, so they kind of they kind of thought it would be fun to sort of do the film together, and that. So I think this is one of Stan Lee's first film appearances, if not his first. I'm not 100% sure on that. I've not got his IMDb in front of me, but it certainly makes it an interesting thing to look at going back. Red Buttons, I thought, was great in this.
He is.
He's like this really tough report. Again, he gets some of the real him and Eric Roberts. They're both like quirky banter. It's just quirky banter, quirky banter. Just off each other and stuff. They've got some really good scenes. And James Earl Jones is almost, I say almost playing against type, because he's not quite what you expect, but he's got that kind of James Earl Jones authority as the police lieutenant and stuff. But they don't quite. I don't. I felt a little bit disappointed. I don't think they did quite enough with James Earl Jones. But Red Buttons really makes up for it. He's just. I thought he was just going to be a cameo or like a quick 5 minutes. He's in it loads. He's great. And you've also got, I think it says introducing Nicholas Chinland, who later became better known as Nick Chinland, who's I think he was the I've, he's been in various things. Like he was, I think he was the villain in Close Range with Scott Adkins. But he's done all sorts of stuff over the years, and he's one of the kind of main heavy characters in this. He's Con Air, Billy Bedlam. That was probably one of his more famous turns, at Training Day and stuff like that. Chronicles of Riddick. He's done loads of stuff anyway. But so yeah, his career was kind of starting around here. So historically, I find this a really interesting watch, and as well as sort of stylistically and narratively, because it's not. I think even at the time, people might have been a bit surprised that it's the kind of film that it is, because it does really stand out and mark itself as like, no, we're not going to be that film that you think we are. We're just going to muck about and do, so have all these weird asides and odd, quirky bits of dialogue and stuff. And yeah, it's very playful film.
Yeah, certainly worth sort of rechecking out if you haven't seen it for a while. Where can people find this on Rich?
Well, I think it's probably available on certain for. I think it's. I think you can get like special formats and DVDs and stuff floating around, but we. It's not very. I don't think it's a particularly easy to film to find on streaming services. I might be wrong. I found it. I think I just found it on YouTube.
Correct.
One of the sort of film archivist kind of. Channels that I follow, which basically, upload unofficially, obviously, obscure and hard to find films. And yeah, this one certainly seems to have. I think this is probably an upload of a, because it was widescreen. I think it must have been like from a Blu-ray or something that perhaps is out of print now. But it's certainly a hard film to find here in the UK, as far as I'm aware. I've not seen it around for years.
Indeed. And on that note, we shall put a link in the footnotes, so you can go check this one out. That is the end of the episode. So thanks to Rich and Steve for covering these films this week.
No problem. That was a good bunch, I thought.
Yep.
Apart from that one.
apart from Till Death Do Us Part. Yeah. If you think about Till Death Do Us Part, perhaps go check out Till Death with Megan Fox on Netflix. I think that was Much better film. Otherwise, don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter at the DTV Digest. Also, the Short Shots, where we have a whole library of shorts that we've curated and put together for you to peruse during your lunchtime or wherever. Have a cup of coffee, find a martial arts film. It's all good fun. Thank you for listening. Tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.